eine Entscheidung zu treffen, wie dann letzten Endes ein Hämophilie-Patient behandelt werden soll, hängt nicht nur davon ab, ihm gute Medikamente zu geben, sondern hängt von vielen verschiedenen Dingen ab, wie zum Beispiel, wie geht es dem Kind dabei und welche Entscheidung fällt auch ein Kind. Hier sind Halime und Habermann, der Alles rund ums Blut Podcast.
Hallo Susanne.
Hallo Björn.
Susanne, wir sind hier auf dem Hemonext Forum in Berlin.
Berlin,
kurz
genau.
Nachdenken, aber wir sind in Berlin. Ja. Und wir hatten schon zwei tolle Vorträge gehört, unter anderem einen von Professor Geismeier, Psychologe, über Entscheidungsfindung.
Ja, die hat er schön aufgelistet, evidence-based oder ob wir polarisieren. Mhm. Meine Zusammenfassung ist eigentlich, ich mache alles so wie immer.
Was wir nicht vergessen dürfen, und da ist er jetzt nicht drauf eingegangen, ist ja die Bauchentscheidung, die manchmal
genau,
gar nicht so schlecht ist.
Genau, das meinte
ist,
ich ne? ja.
Und,
ne?
Wir haben ja als Ärzte, das ist ja kein Problem, sondern das Thema, dass wir einfach oft Entscheidungen treffen müssen.
Ja.
Und eine, die auch sehr viele Entscheidungen trifft und auch sehr, sehr gute Entscheidungen trifft, ist heute als Gast bei uns Frau Mancuso.
Genau, Maria Elisa Mancuso. Sie ist Kinderärztin in Mailand, in einem ganz sehr großen Hämophiliezentrum. Und sie ist eine renommierte Hämophiliebehandlerin, die sich auch sehr viel einsetzt in der WFH, also in der World Hemophilia Society und aber auch europaweit. Und sie ist an vielen Leitlinien beteiligt und trifft viele, viele Entscheidungen. Und es wäre ja mal interessant, wie sie wirklich Entscheidungen trifft. Hi, Elisa. I want to introduce you. Nice to meet you here in Berlin. And it was a very great pleasure to hear your talk about the next generation of medication, how hemophilia will go on. But the next speaker was how to get...
The perfect decision.
It's
also about decision making.
The decision making. And it was very clear, interesting how to hear him, hear to his talk, evidence-based, and how to polarize decisions or somehow. But you make many decisions in your practice and in your hemophilia treatment. But one of the main interesting questions we have. What about when you will have a hemophilia baby? What will your main interesting decision for your baby?
Hi, Susan. Thank you for having me here with you today. This is a very interesting question because, as I already mentioned, our job is not just looking at the clinical needs. We also need to look at the life of these children. And if you ask me, you know, looking at, you know, a child with hemophilia and what I would like for him or her to have in the future is to be confident with their disease. So to accept the disease, to embrace the disease and to live a life which will be normal together with the disease. So meaning that we cannot get rid of that. Unfortunately, we are not yet at the, you know, the stage of getting these children cured, but we can offer them the good environment to live with hemophilia in a good way. So I would be really disappointed if those children will feel to be different or will feel to be isolated, not to have the opportunity to live thoroughly their life as their peers. So this will be my main concern looking at the future. So I think our main responsibility is to use at best what we have, not really, I mean, the drugs are just a tool to give back these children and their family a normal way of living. And we should think about this drug in this way. They are instruments. They are not the final objective of our job.
So today the drugs are very good. We have excellent results. We have almost no bleedings. But the treatment of those patients is more than just providing the drugs.
Exactly. Treatment of hemophilia also includes something which goes beyond the drugs. Treatment with hemophilia includes let these people, which can be a caregiver, a child, or an adult patient with hemophilia, being like confident with their disease and being able also to benefit from different approach. I can say that, for instance, families and parents should have a good psychological support. Also, you know, taking care of the musculoskeletal health is very important, meaning that it's not just treatment of those who have a joint problem already, but also preparing the one who are still healthy, like with healthy joints, to prepare them to move properly in order to maintain this joint health. So let's say physical therapy is also, it's not only rehabilitation, it's also learning how to move, it's also counseling about which is the most appropriate activity. Because sometimes it happens to me that some family comes, enter the outpatient clinic telling, okay, my child should play tennis or should play basketball, but indeed in the end the child has no, let's say the physical structure is not good for the sport, and not because they have hemophilia, but because each one of us have different, let's say, also physical properties and physical characteristics. So also hemophilia care is also education, not only for the drugs or the coagulation disorder, but it's also education about the fact that life can be lived in a normal way. And also the other risk that we should avoid is also to overdo. Sometimes patients, parents, they just to challenge the disease, they do too much. And also, you know, not recognizing that the limitation that they have, they are not related to hemophilia. Each one of us, we have limitation. And if we understand, if we know them very well, we accept them, we can live our normal life in a proper way. Rejecting limitation or trying not to see the limitation will for sure make a problem. Mm-hmm. So just to give, to go back to your question, hemophilia care includes good drug, proper use of the drug, and to me the first proper use is to do prophylaxis. So going to prophylaxis and then all the support, which can be psychological, physical, and you know, this is the way. And also having let's say a good communication within the physician team, but also peer-to-peer communication.
It's interesting when you see all the books and how we, when pharmaceutical industry want to point out hemophilia patients, they always put out it's an outstanding person. But it's not an outstanding person, it's a normal person. So this is why I'm not accept this books, you are outstanding, you are someone who are special or something like this. This is what we have to point out. And looking what you're talking about, for example, physiotherapy is not only rehabilitation. Coming out to our project HemMotion, when we look for, we have a project and educate physiotherapists not only for rehabilitation. No, we have to exercise physiotherapists for normal, how about normal, what is normal? So when we prepare patients, for example, for tennis, so we give a physiotherapist regardless to prepare these patients for tennis, for basketball, for something else, but they have to be prepared. How about physical activation? How about gait analysis, for example? This is also to prepare, and this is what we have to point out, not only drugs, we have to prepare them. How about joint moving, muscle strengthless, or something else?
And also giving them space to talk about their disease. I think one of my most interesting experience as a physician is also the attendance of the summer camp with children and adolescents with hemophilia and other bleeding disorder. Let them have the opportunity to exchange, to talk about the disease, even to be, you know, upset about that, or just to say what they feel. This liberates them, because we are not growing up superheroes.
Yeah.
This is the point. We are growing up children, adolescents, that should be happy in their life. And to be happy, we should be aware of who we are. And it includes also being hemophilia.
Yeah, being happy is not a life in an entertainment park, but it's, well, my impression is the happiest child is this child that can make decisions on its own.
Exactly.
And coming back to tennis or any other sport activity, if a child wants to play tennis, it's not a decision by the parents, it's a decision by the child, because his friends or whatever are playing tennis and he wants to just stay with his friends, take part in this daily activity.
And also take the decision that this is not good. So try, see that for his body or the way he's, you know, the way he moves, tennis is not the ideal one, but give them the possibility to try, to understand, and to make the decision to switch to something different, not just to say, this is forbidden, you just can go to the swimming pool and swim. This will be very limiting and not make anyone happy.
Coming back to the tools that you've mentioned in the very beginning, like the treatment with the drugs, but also the psychological help for the children, the physiotherapy, all this is time consuming. This cannot be done by yourself.
Oh no, but it's not just for time issues, it's also for competence and expertise. I do think that the physical part should be taken by a musculoskeletal expert, which, you know, can be either, you know, a physiotherapist. In some countries we have physiatrists. I mean, in Italy, for instance, we have also physiatrists, which I know are not present in all countries. We have even some orthopedic surgeons that are very sensitive to the point of screening and prevention, and not only going into the operating theater, as well as the psychological issues. You can have a psychologist. In Italy, we have some, you know, we don't have social workers, but they can also help. And in some situation, we have some figures of counselors. So some specialized professionals who are able to somehow enter the family environment and help and facilitate the conversation where there is some tension, maybe even not really the people, sometimes parents and also the family is not really aware that there is a tension there. But when this counselor from outside comes into the family and try to talk with the children and then, or the adolescents and then the parents, maybe first separately and then all together, this tension comes out, they can elaborate on that, and this is very helpful to helpful to overcome and overwhelm this problem.
Björn, da siehst du es, eine Entscheidung zu treffen, wie dann letzten Endes ein Hämophilie-Patient behandelt werden soll, hängt nicht nur davon ab, ihm gute Medikamente zu geben, sondern hängt von vielen verschiedenen Dingen ab, wie zum Beispiel, wie geht es dem Kind dabei und welche Entscheidung fällt auch ein Kind? Und wie oft hören wir uns ein Kind tatsächlich an in unserer täglichen Praxis? Und ich muss dir sagen, ich bin dazu mehr und mehr übergegangen, die Kinder zu befragen, was sie gerne machen möchten. Und oft merke ich, wie die Eltern versuchen einzuschreiten, weil sie natürlich das Beste wollen für ihre Kinder. Aber am Ende des Tages ist es auch eine gemeinsame Entscheidung. Und vielleicht ist auch diese Entscheidung nicht tatsächlich, die ich gerne führen wollen würde, sondern man muss auch mal etwas wagen, um etwas Neues zu sehen.
Ja, und es hängt oftmals auch an der Art der Kommunikation. Wir sind gewohnt, mit Erwachsenen zu reden. Ja? Und tatsächlich ist dann das so dominant, dass das Kind manchmal total vergessen wird. Und das ist das, was ich versuche, und du machst das genauso, dass wir tatsächlich versuchen, uns in der Sprechstunde mit dem Kind zu unterhalten und auf das Kind zu hören. Und die Eltern können vielleicht ein bisschen unterstützen in der Kommunikation, aber unser Hauptansprechpartner ist das Kind.
Und ein normales Leben zu führen und nicht ein außergewöhnliches, ein normales Leben, so wie jeder andere auch. Und ich glaube, das hat uns Elisa Manguso, glaube ich, sehr eindrücklich versucht, auch klar darzustellen, es geht um Normalität. Thank you very much.
Thank
being
you,
here
Susan.
To share with you, with us your experience, and we'll be happy to see you again.
Thank you, Susan. I will be happy to be with you again.
Thank you very much. Susanne, vielen Dank und bis zum nächsten Mal.
Bis zum nächsten Mal, Björn. Mit freundlicher Unterstützung von SOBI. Swedish Orphan by Vital.